You're watching Press TV. I'm Barry Honardo. Two failed U.S.-backed Security Council resolutions vetoed by Russia and China. Promised reforms by Damascus. A new constitution. Kofi Annan's six-point peace plan followed by a fragile ceasefire and a flock of U.N. observers and most recently multi-party parliamentary elections. All of those have been decisive factors over the past year or so in Syria. But is the Syrian solution gradually turning into the Syrian conundrum as the U.S. and its Arab allies are arming groups fighting the government with significantly more and better weapons in recent weeks? Stay tuned as Press TV's news analysis delves deeper into the unrest in Syria.
Syrian President Bashar al-Assad has denounced certain Western and regional governments for supporting and failing to protest the rise in violence in his country.
For the leaders of these countries, it's becoming clear that this is not spring, but chaos. And as I have said, if you sow chaos in Syria, you may be infected by it yourself. And they understand this perfectly.
He accused the West of ignoring the opposition's violence, saying the West only talks about violence on the government's side and not a word about terrorists. Based on a fresh report by the Washington Post, armed gangs in Syria are receiving more weapons. The report says the flow of arms is financed by some Arab nations and partly coordinated by the United States. Saudi Arabia and Qatar have openly announced that they are bankrolling armed groups in Syria. Assad told a Russian TV channel in an interview that since the start of the 14-month-long unrest in his country, Damascus has been facing armed terrorist groups. He added that those groups have become emboldened in their violent acts in recent months. The Syrian president also referred to the presence of religious extremists and al-Qaeda members from abroad in his country.
It's not army, first of all. And it's not free.
There are religious extremists like those from al-Qaeda. I mean, not only the organization itself, but the same way of thinking too, an extremist, a terrorist one. And yes, there are some foreign mercenaries. Some of them are alive. They were detained, and we are going to expose them.
He further highlighted public support for the reforms undertaken by his government, saying the proof was the high turnout in the May 7th parliamentary polls. Assad added that since the arrival of UN observers, there has been an increase in the number of terrorist attacks. Hundreds of UN observers have been deployed in the country to monitor compliance with a ceasefire plan brokered by Kofi Annan, the joint UN Arab League envoy to Damascus.
Well, joining me now is my panel of experts, author and historian Mr. Webster Griffin Tarpley, joining us from Washington, political commentator Jihad Mora Kade from Beirut, and author and radio host Mr. Stephen Lenman, joining me from Chicago. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Tarpley. In an interview with a Russian television outlet, Syrian President Bashar al-Assad has talked about the country's recent parliamentary elections and the Syrian opposition stance. He has said that, how can you boycott the people of whom you consider yourself the representative? Does he have a point there?
Absolutely he does. But what we see is that the so-called Syrian National Council, large parts of the local coordinating committees, and the totality, really, of the so-called Syrian Free Army are simply pawns of NATO and the United States, Britain, France, Israel on the one side, and they're also pawns of the reactionary feudal monarchies of the Gulf, the Saudis, the Qatar people, and so forth. The fact that we had 51% of the people turn out to vote, I think, is extraordinary. Any vote in that election is a vote against the rebels. It doesn't have to be for Assad. And as a matter of fact, we know that a couple of opposition figures, Jamil and Ossi, have certainly been elected. This was also the first election where there was no constitutionally prescribed power monopoly of the Ba'ath Party. But of course, the Syrian National Council takes orders from NATO, and the orders from NATO have been no compromise, no negotiation, because NATO doesn't want a peaceful solution. They want to have an issue that they can use for invasion, for bombing, for terrorism, and for regime change. So I think Assad is absolutely right on that. Just in terms of these elections, 51% may not sound like a great turnout, but that's exactly the turnout that we had here in the United States in November 2000 when George W. Bush stole that election. So 51% is not the reason to bomb anybody, I don't think.
Over to our guest in Beirut. President Assad issued a veiled warning to unnamed countries that he said were interfering in Syria. He said, if you sow chaos in Syria, you may be infected by it yourself. And they understand this perfectly well, unquote. Well, recent clashes in Lebanon's northern city of Tripoli show that the unrest in Syria has already crept into Lebanon. What would be the impact on the Persian Gulf Arab countries like Saudi Arabia and Qatar?
I do not think that President Assad can do anything much anymore in the region. The only place where he can still play a card is in Tripoli, Lebanon, and he has already played it through this through the request to arrest the person in Tripoli. So basically, President Assad has only one card left to play, which is Lebanon. In the Gulf, the power that he used to have is very, very limited today. One must understand that President Assad is fighting for his survival. He certainly cannot unleash anything in the Gulf or anywhere else. But I would like to come back to the 51% that people seem to be happy about, particularly President Bashar al-Assad. 51%, first of all, I don't know at what extent it is true, because anything coming out of Syria usually is quite well doctored. Second, 51%, I just wonder what is the percentage in places like Homs, Hama, Aleppo, Idlib? Was it really 51%? I mean, if you take the major cities in Syria, chances are 51% is not at all the case, just in case you would imagine that the 51% figure is true. So, no, I do not believe in a democracy under the shelling of the Syrian tanks. If anybody thinks that this is an acceptable democracy, I tend to disagree.
Over to our guest in Chicago, Mr. Lenman. In your thoughts, what is the ulterior motive of Saudi Arabia and Qatar's involvement in Syria's unrest? Nobody believes they support democracy and people's rights in Syria because they, too, are suppressing pro-democracy movements in countries at home and in countries like Bahrain and Yemen. So what is it exactly that they want?
Well, indeed so. Saudi Arabia is closely linked to the U.S. I agree with Webster Tarpley across the board. I profoundly disagree with the guests from Beirut. Assad's status in the region is no different now than it was a year ago, 2 years ago. What's going on in Syria has got nothing to do with an uprising. It has everything to do with a Washington-generated, Western-generated, NATO-involved, Saudi Arabia-involved, Qatar-involved, Jordan-involved, Israel-involved, Lebanon's March 14th alliance-involved insurgency to replace him with a pro-Western puppet regime. That's what's going on. Assad is doing what any responsible leader should do. There is violence on the streets in the cities of Syria. Any responsible leader anywhere in the world, including in America, would confront it and stop it any way he or she could.
I am outraged. I am outraged. Have you ever seen anybody in America bomb the cities? It's outrageous what you are saying, sir.
Assad isn't bombing any city.
No?
You don't know what goes on in America. I do. I know what goes on in America.
I have never heard about anybody bombing any city in America or in Europe or anywhere else.
All right, Mr. Morikata, please wait your turn, sir.
Mr. Lenman,
can you finish off your comments, please?
Police shoot people? Police beat people?
Continue, Mr. Lenman.
I would like to observe that anybody who went to vote,
we're talking about Syria
did
right
so
now,
knowing that they were risking their lives. The people voting were risking their lives because the MO of the death squad sent in by NATO, these Al-Qaeda and foreign fighters that the the Syrian government is now exposing, is that these are snipers operating from rooftops, from the tops of buildings. They're cowards, they're terrorists, they killed women and children. You can be sure that if you're going to vote in Syria, your life is in danger. So to find 51% of the people who are willing to vote under those circumstances, I think is a very important political fact. Now let me just add two more things. The political effect of the elections has been to accelerate the breakup of this self-styled Syrian National Council, right? The news of the last 24 hours is that the leader of it, this guy Galyoun, who is a pedant from the Sorbonne, an academic, quackademic, we might say, he is now quitting as the head of it because these NATO pawns can't get along. They were supposed to have a meeting in Cairo. The Syrian National Council boycotted the meeting because they didn't like the way the invitations were being sent out. This is absolutely crazy. Nobody in his right mind wants to go from an established government with Assad, whatever you think of him, to the total chaos of the Syrian National Council. The other point is, here in Washington, we've just had the Kurds being brought in. The State Department invited a Kurdish delegation, and the United States is inciting the Kurds to an armed, violent rebellion against the Syrian government. Now, this is something that people in Turkey ought to take notice of, because once that Kurdish operation gets going, there's no telling where it will stop, right? We've seen this again and again and again. We're told that the Turks are considering invoking Article 4 of NATO, that they want to be defended against a few thousand refugees. It's also absurd. But if the Kurds go, if Turks are willing to go down this road, they will find that it leads to the breakup of Turkey even more certainly than it leads to the breakup of Syria. So the Turks really ought to pull back.
Very well, Mr. Tarpley. Allow me to address my next question back to our guest in Beirut. Saudi Arabia and Qatar have been quick to call upon the democratic aspirations of the Syrian people. This coming from countries that have no elections, no democratic functionality, no elected officials, and also have a horrid human rights record. How do you explain their position on Syria?
Why do you stick with Saudi Arabia? France called for the democratic process in Syria. So did the United States of America. So did all democratic countries in the world. Why do you stick just to Saudi Arabia? So no, I mean, let's come back to reality here. You have a regime who never knew what it means to have a democratic election. A regime where the people vote under the pressure of the Ba'ath Party and its instruments, which are the security services in Syria. People are not free to vote in Syria. If you are really talking about democracy in Syria, then by all means, get the Ba'ath Party out, get the security services out, and have an internationally supervised election. Then you will know, you'll get 80% people voting, and then you will know what the people are thinking. This is democracy. But you do not have democracy in totalitarian state. So Saudi Arabia, or not Saudi Arabia, it is totally out of, it's not at all the question here. Who is suggesting what? Well, why do you think Saudi Arabia? Why don't you say France? France is a democratic country. They are suggesting the same thing.
Mr. Lenman, over to you, sir. First of all, if you'd like to add anything to the comments of Mr. Morakata, and also I'd like to get your thoughts on the issue of Syrian armed groups fighting the government, which are receiving significantly more and better weapons in recent weeks, an effort paid for by Persian Gulf Arab countries, including Saudi Arabia, as we mentioned now, and coordinated by the United States as well. These countries have been saying that they support Kofi Annan's six-point peace plan. How do you explain the contradiction in that regard?
Well, I'm not quite certain what the Kofi Annan plan really is, because it puts the burden on Assad. It practically ignores, not entirely, but it comes close to ignoring the insurgency. As far as the Saudis are concerned, they are in a region of the world with Arab League despots, close U.S. allies. The Saudis are the worst of the lot. The Bahrainis right with them. the worst of the lot. They're close U.S. allies. Maybe the Bahrainis are involved in Syria as well. I don't know. But the Saudis have the deep pockets. They're bankrolling this. America targeted the Assad regime for regime change over a decade ago, along with half a dozen or more other regional countries. It was only a matter of time before they would get around to Syria. We know what's happened since 9/11. Well, Afghanistan, Central Asia, Iraq, Libya, it's Syria's turn. Iran may be next. Lebanon may be next. Hamas may be next. Where does this end? America is waging permanent war. It wants puppet regimes it controls around the world. It gets the Saudis and other regional despots to go along with them. Democracy, my country doesn't support democracy. It doesn't do it at home. It doesn't do it abroad. And for sure, the Saudis don't do it. Syria has got a long way to go to be really democratic. But they have taken some giant steps. Other countries in the region, mainly the Saudis, the Jordanians, they haven't taken step one.
Over to Washington now. Mr. Tarpley, U.S. Defense Secretary Leon Panetta and Director of the National Intelligence, James Clapper, both have confirmed that al-Qaeda have infiltrated Syrian opposition groups. Now, Clapper has even said that al-Qaeda have probably been behind recent bombings in Damascus. Earlier, if I recall, President Obama had confirmed that Washington was providing, quote-unquote, non-lethal assistance to armed groups in Syria. When the U.S. knows that al-Qaeda is operating there, why is it assisting opposition groups that might also encompass al-Qaeda as well? Are they talking about some sort of gray area and the differentiation of terrorists being good and bad?
We always have to remember that al-Qaeda is nothing but the Arab Legion of the CIA, founded to wage war against the Soviets in Afghanistan, and since deployed to places like Bosnia or Chechnya or Algeria and many, many other countries that the United States has decided to target. Since the Libyan events of last year, we have entered a phase which is really Orwellian, where the alliance, the subordination of al-Qaeda to the strategy of NATO is so blatant and open in the eyes of the world that this entire mythology risks collapsing. But it's clear that al-Qaeda fighters have been brought into Syria, above all from Libya, where they had gathered last year. So now this year the campaign is in Syria. And of course, the United States has armed this uprising the entire time. And the uprising was violent from the word go, as I found on the ground last November in Homs and in Banias. The shooting began the very first day in the middle of March of 2011. I would like to pose a challenge to General Robert Mood of the so-called United Nations Observer Force. Now, he's got a couple of hundred people on the ground now, and he's been there for quite a few weeks. They're supposed to observe. So world public opinion wants to know, what did you observe? Let's hear a report. What did you find? What we know for sure is that the UN observers were attacked not once, but twice that we know of, by the death squads. And General Mood seems to be incapable of giving a report about this. He literally doesn't know what hit him. So we want to know from General Mood, General Mood, your report, was it al-Qaeda that attacked you? Who were they working for? What we're seeing is the entire United Nations bureaucracy, past and present, with Ban Ki-moon, Kofi Annan, Navi Pillay, Baroness Valerie Amos of the Human Rights Department, General Mood. These are not international civil servants. These are facilitators of imperialism. And we're getting a situation that looks very much like the League of Nations, where the international body is actually a tool of appeasement and aggression. So we've left collective security behind, and we're now in the area of the UN as a facilitator and helper of imperialist aggression. And that means the UN is likely to go the way of the League of Nations. But in the meantime, let's hear something from General Mood.
Well, over to our guest in Beirut. Russia said it will block the inclusion of Syria from the declaration of the upcoming Group of Eight summit. Why is Russia and also China so fiercely opposed to the role of the U.S. and its allies in Syria? Are they worried of what happened in Libya last year?
We all know that the Russians were not very happy with the way the UN resolution on Libya was handled by the Western powers. So obviously they were much more prudent this time around with regards to Syria. On the other hand, Russia has moved a long way since they had their veto, which is now they accept that President Bashar is fighting an opposition. This opposition is an opposition in the eyes of Russia and China, and they have asked through the Kofi Annan plan for the two parties to have talks with each other. These parties, President Bashar Assad yesterday on Russian TV said, this is not an opposition, these are terrorists. So you can see the the divide between the Russian position and the Syrian position. For the United Nations, and I'm sorry for our guest in Washington, if he really wants to hear about General Mood's opinion, then why is he concerned about his opinion when he thinks that the United Nations itself is a tool of Western powers? Then the opinion of General Mood would be also a tool of Western powers. So he's got to make up his mind. Either the United Nations is an independent body which is balanced, which has a balanced opinion, then he wants to hear the opinion of General Mood, or he accepts that it is not a balanced body, it is a tool of the Americans and the Western powers, then he should not be concerned about the opinion of Mr. Mood, General Mood. On the other hand,
we can't judge this unless we hear what
his attacks
opinion
about
is.
The United Nations. I'm sorry? My opinion, I'm totally against the opinion of the gentleman in Washington.
What's going on in
my
Syria?
Opinion,
all right, Mr. Tarpley, why don't you add anything, if you have, to the comments just made by Mr. Markata?
I'm going to say that the way you read it about the attacks on the United Nations, okay, are not the fact of terrorists, as you may think. And I think the Syrian regime has got something to do with it, because the Syrian regime is not happy having the observers on the ground. Because the Syrian regime, for 1 month now, 1.5 months, has shown that they have not withdrawn their forces, their military forces from the cities, as they had agreed to with Bashar Assad. And going forward, I do not think, they're turning up the heat on the Syrian regime after a year and a half of upsets in Syria. I think Bashar al-Assad has proven that he is incapable of keeping the ground. He still has not been able to manage the crisis
I'd like to ask Mr. Tarpley to come in on the discussion and add anything, if he has, to your comments.
Again, the observers are supposed to observe. We need a detailed report. What have they found? Have they found anything? Are they blind? Are they deaf? If they're attacked, don't they even know who did it? The problem, of course, is, as anybody can see, that if they gave an empirical report about what they found, they would have to report the presence of foreign fighters organized into death squads, directed by NATO and paid for by Saudi Arabia, Qatar, the Emirates.
How about the Syrian regime?
Of the Gulf states.
Why not the Syrian regime itself?
No state can be an aggressor on its own territory. The question of international peace and security is not posed.
All right, gentlemen, sorry to interrupt you. Allow me to get a final comment in from our guest in Chicago. Mr. Lenman, do you have anything to add to what was just said?
Oh, absolutely. I think you have to be deaf, dumb, and blind not to know that Western death squads have been committing murder, atrocities, and they've been doing it from the very beginning, early last year. Mainstream Der Spiegel magazine wrote a detailed article about these killer gangs committing atrocities. They interviewed one of their people, and I wrote about it. Ugly, ugly stuff. You literally have to wear blinders not to know what's going on. Syrians are paying a big price. It's not because of Assad. Assad is defending them. When he went to Homs, one of the cities the Beirut guests mentioned, the people welcomed him. When the Syrian troops...
Okay, Mr. Lenin, I'm sorry. I apologize. I'm going to have to interrupt you there. And I'd like to apologize to our panel of experts as we are running short of time. Of course, many topics and points left undiscussed. Hopefully that will happen in another edition of our news analysis here on Press TV. I'd like to thank my guests, author and historian, Mr. Webster Griffin Tarpley from Washington, political commentator, Mr. Jihad Murakata from Beirut, and author and radio host, Mr. Stephen Lenman from Chicago. Gentlemen, thanks for sharing your thoughts with us here on Press TV. I'm signing off now, but join us again same time, same place tomorrow for another edition of Press TV's news analysis. Goodbye.